Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier Podcast. On with me today, I have a guest, Justin Searle, who is the managing partner at Utilsec, the chair of the board of UtahSec, there's a couple others here. He's an instructor and author for the SANS Institute, instructor for Black Hat, and faculty at IONS, consulting and research group. So we can hit on some of those or all of those, but wow, Justin is here as kind of an expert. We want to bring him in to get some insight on what we can learn from his vast experience. Welcome, Justin.
Thank you.
And thanks for being on today. So first of all, we just went through your long list of what you've done. I know I met you back quite a few years ago working for some of this, the national standards groups and SGIP with NIST.
Oh, yeah.
But give us your life story. Tell us about your background and how you got to where you're at. And what made you interested in cybersecurity?
Oh, sure. So, I think my very first full-time job out of high school before I went to college, I was working for an engineering firm wiring and testing water treatment control cabinetry for Southern California. And the firm was here in Utah, and that was really my first full-time job and kind of first started me down the path inside a control system space. But after that, I went to school and ended up finding myself inside of IT and cybersecurity. I just always enjoyed computers. I always enjoyed, when I was back in a teenager, playing a lot of games and trying to figure out how to not have to dig up those stupid manuals where you'd have to flip open the manual and find the word in this paragraph on this page. So very quickly learned that, hey, if you just go in and you can use a hex editor and take that little check right out, and you never have to find those stupid books anymore.
Yeah.
So that was kind of my introduction to cybersecurity and starting to build my own computers to be able to save money. Kind of got me more into the hardware and more technical side. And over the last 16 years, I just started in more of the defending, starting to do host-based protections, intrusion detection systems, VPN solutions for companies, getting into Cisco networking gear and different types of protections there. And any good defender wants to go through and try to find out how good his defenses are. So you start learning how to attack your own defenses. And about halfway through my career, I was working for JetBlue Airways as the security architect for JetBlue Airways, decided to take a little bit of a career change and focus more on the offensive side than the defensive side. And over the last 8 years, been doing pretty much nothing but offensive through doing consulting, penetration tests around offensive measures, as well as doing training for, like you had already mentioned, the SANS Institute, Black Hat, and other mm-hmm. types of organizations, really trying to help bring knowledge to people, as well as to work with, at least in the case of control systems, asset owners and vendors on how to properly deploy and secure their equipment and test for vulnerabilities that are in there before some attacker out there does.
Yeah. Well, you said you started working on your own computers, building your own things. You know, I remember back in the day when I was trying to figure out what this syntax error thing meant as a teenager, I thought it was going to be the end of me. I was like, there's just something broken with this computer. And you know, a lot of my work was to try and get around, how do I get rid of this stupid error that keeps coming up?
Hey, well, specifically around that error, if you ever see that error while you're poking around on a website, that's a vulnerability.
Well,
that means that whatever you just did, it's actually trying to interpret it as some type of a command. So
you don't see that particular error anymore. They've went so much higher to different errors, you know, the instead of just a global, oh, there's something wrong, boom.
Oh, but it's coming back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack.
Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Well, that means that whatever you just did, it's actually trying to interpret it as some type of a command. So
you don't see that particular error anymore. They've went so much higher to different errors, you know, to instead of just a global, oh, there's something wrong, boom.
Oh, but it's coming back. No, so if you like the latest web applications that are out there with I don't know if you looked into JavaScript on the back end. When we're actually like the mean stack. Mm-hmm. So some of the newest web frameworks that are out there, same thing. If you have an input and you put something in there and it's not represented, it'll actually tell you syntax error, which specifically means that your input was misunderstood as some type of command and it didn't make sense of the command. Yeah. So yeah, that error is still around.
So you know you're hitting, it's trying to interpret what you put in as a command. So you just keep going down that rabbit hole until
yeah,
you
no
get it
JS
to run the command.
Yeah, Node.js, yep.
Yep, exactly. Wow. So first of all, what would be your definition of cybersecurity?
Cybersecurity. Oh, so I end up working inside of the control system field. So we end up doing a lot of physical as well. But really, when we talk control systems, because that's something that really bridges cyber and physical, it almost becomes a little easier to discuss. When we talk cyber, we are primarily talking about, you know, the electrons side of it, where we have communications between the equipment. So being able to communicate with some piece of technology or system remotely via some electronic communications. That's generally what I consider cyber. If I can play with something by sending electrons at it or some communications, that's cyber instead of physical, where I have to manipulate it with my own hands.
Mm-hmm. So the security part. That's cyber. Now, cybersecurity.
Oh, good
point. How do you define cybersecurity?
So, security is the means of trying to defend against attacks or malicious or unexpected behaviors inside of that cyber communications that's there. So, cybersecurity, you know, I think all of us are cybersecurity experts. I've always personally hated the term cyber. Actually, first started being forced to use it once we were working with a NIST and the SGIP and in the control system space, mm-hmm. Because we have so much tie back to military and government space there. Otherwise, it would be IT security. But cybersecurity, like I said, just really trying to block those attacks, build defenses, try to keep people from using the communication channels for things that are not business justified.
Yeah. And two things you said there I kind of wanted to elaborate on. You know, block attacks, build defenses. They're, you know, very, I would almost say separate things, but very big part of cybersecurity. And the other thing is when you mentioned when you went to NIST working with the government and then information security people had a different approach towards security. And I remember the same thing. I had worked in nuclear power plants and utilities and industrial controls and then integrated circuit design level. And then I went to SGIP and started working with everybody from the government. And I was like, well, you're talking about information security. I've been designing hardware and working on physical cyber systems for 15 years, and we don't even think about information security.
Yeah.
That divide there was confusing to me at best at first. What do you think about that as far as the cybersecurity, information security? Is there a set difference, or how do we connect the two?
So I don't honestly, specifically working inside of this space, because over the last 7 years, I've been focusing almost entirely on critical infrastructure, control systems, industrial control systems. And for us, while there definitely is a difference when you take somebody from the IT field and somebody from the OT or the engineering side of the house and try to sit them down, there's always huge misunderstandings about what we're trying to do, what actually defends a system, and you know what security even is and what it means. I mean, because you know, engineers are really focused on resiliency and reliability. Mm-hmm. So, but really, when it comes down to it, the attacks on our critical infrastructure and control systems are still forms of information being sent to them. It's the control signal that's being sent on the cyber side using IT technologies that's actually controlling that control system remotely. So while I think that initially there's always a lack of understanding and trying to come to terms because of the different worlds that those two sides of the house live in, in reality, the truth and where we really need to build the defenses, at least in critical infrastructure, is right there in the middle of it. I mean, mm-hmm. it is IT-based, but just with consciousness of the concerns and the limitations around the control systems itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. And I know I struggle even now when we're looking at a lot of the organizations here in the cybersecurity effort that, you know, I talk about a lot on this podcast. Are very military background, very from the information security focus, and not as much. We're really trying to bring some awareness and make them weigh in that there's a whole, we'll say on the industrial controls, the utility side, the energy system side, there's a whole nother, almost half of the market in cybersecurity, half of the need doesn't have as big a focus on military systems.
Sure.
And but anyway, that's that particular thing I run into a lot. So it's always good whenever you're looking at putting an effort together, and you've been on a lot of these federal standards efforts. What are your recommendations for how to balance that and not become all government focused in cybersecurity or information security or all ICS focused? You know, what's the way to balance an effort?
You know, I think in all my government initiatives with NIST and SGIP and some of the projects I've worked on since with DOE and DHS, I think the one thing that we always struggle in isn't necessarily the government influence or people coming from government, even though I think that plays into it. The bigger problem is we often have a gross lack of people in the room that actually have more technical depth and hands-on experience. So you end up getting a lot of, you know, IT professionals as well as, and this is where the government influence comes in, that are really around process and policy inside of the IT world, very paper pushing heavy type individuals that are trying to do the best they possibly can, but often simply don't understand or don't have a connection to the actual systems, have never touched them, have never actually looked at them or understanding the underlying technologies. And so trying to design security guidance at that high of level without that experience is often very challenging. I know that often in many of those government initiatives, I kind of felt like that anchor rope that was tying the group down to, you know, Earth and reminding them that, hey, below all these clouds, there actually is ground below us. And we have to remember that there is still ground below us. And I often felt like I was being stretched because there just sometimes wasn't enough people in the room that could help explain why the specific topic that we were talking about didn't actually apply to this type of a system because of the technology being used.
So, and that's a good point, and I've seen that as well, where the divide between technical people and the decision makers. So if we started looking at, you know, there's some base amount of information, knowledge, technical knowledge that we need to give to the business people, maybe business school or teaching our elected officials is one of the efforts that they're looking at here. What types of things do we need to give as a base level of knowledge to the people that are not technical? And is there a very minimum set, you know, a lot of times they're not the personality type to even desire to be that technically involved. But what is kind of the minimum piece? Where do they need to go with the understanding in order to connect the two?
I think the biggest thing is you're hitting the nail right on the head, and not just about, you know, some of the management and government officials trying to understand and make sense of all this guidance and research that all of us are doing. But, you know, like I said, even the people that are communicating or are participating in this may not have that same depth as well. I think if we can finally get to the point where we can start talking about cause and effect, You know, when we talk about this security control, what is the actual benefit to this system? And break it down into very, very simplistic three-color terms, right? So the red, green, and yellow terms that we often talk about in management. So something that's very simple, very elementary, often having to leverage, you know, maybe very simple metaphors to try to get some of the points across. And, you know, and sometimes the higher we try to explain what we're trying to do, the more simplified we get. And that's a blessing and a curse at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's ever a perfect solution. I mean, you know, those of us with the technical knowledge, we struggle at simply understanding the systems in the first place because we're working at such a complexity level that we're challenging the extents of our human brains.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Yeah, when you get so far down, I know I did that for years. I always say it's kind of like if I'm climbing a rock wall, you're looking for the next handhold. But yeah. You step back a little bit and you realize, oh, there's, you know, how tall is
the
cliff?
So much more.
And then you keep going back until you see, oh, wow, it's a mountain and not just a rock face. But then at that point, you can't see the handholds.
Sure.
So you really have that, depending on where you're at, you can only absorb so much as a human, and being able to put the whole scope together becomes problematic.
Yeah.
So how do you, you know, we're looking at all these things you've done, instructors for SANS, instructor for Black Hats. You said you're very offensive, and that we'll talk about that in a minute. Not that you're offensive, but your type of what you do with cybersecurity is on the offensive front.
Yes.
And I want you to describe that a little bit better in a minute. But let me go where I'm talking. All this training you've done, is it for technical people? Is it for those kind of the business people? What and where do you recommend? Is there anything that you already have or you can point people to?
So a lot of the training that I do is more on the technical side, but the courses that I have, you know, definitely range from entry level type courses that really try to help teach and educate people with the basics. You know, I do that through both some basic defensive courses inside of industrial control systems through the SANS Institute. That's like the ICS 410, which is cybersecurity certifications out there for industrial control systems. And it was actually something created by the industry and brought to SANS, and I was asked to write a course around that. Mm-hmm. And so that's a very basic intro level that was geared for engineers as well as IT staff to help both sides understand the opposite side. So it's a fairly basic class. And then it goes probably to the more extreme end, where my Black Hat course that's called Assessing and Exploiting Control Systems is specifically around performing penetration tests on control systems in a safe manner, because, of course, that's always, you know, raises eyebrows. What? You're attacking control systems? Yeah, we attack control systems because we need to find the flaws. And so that course is designed to help both vendors test their own gear as well as asset owners test equipment in their staging and testing environments or during acquisition times to try to identify flaws and identify the best defenses to mitigate those flaws.
How much of that information do you think somebody would need to know if they're not technically in a technical job in cyber, though?
Most of that's not going to be, yeah, if they're not in a technical job and they're more in the management job, you know, something like that basic ICS 410, that the one I described about the defenses around control systems, mm-hmm. You know, even something that's a very low level, very entry level type course, and somebody that's responsible for managing technical staff, I think that would be appropriate. But if you start going, you know, levels above that manager's head, or getting into, you know, congressmen or government, you know, government's political positions, then, you know, of course, that's definitely far beyond that scope. So yeah, and the perfect solution there to provide education around that's a really tough one.
Yeah.
Because you know that's really not a politician's job. It's just, you know, little teeny tidbits of information that they need to know, and that's usually best done by having a technical advisor in that space for whoever that politician is.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the challenge they have, having talked to a lot of the decision makers. Who do we trust as a technical advisor? And
yeah.
They hear so many different things, and I've even had somebody tell me, well, I don't listen to anybody particular. I just try to see if I listen to 10 people, what are they, five of them have in common? And that's the things I start to think are in common. So it becomes almost like an opinion poll then, where they're not trying to understand it, but then they're confused with who is it technically that I should be using as an advisor?
Exactly. Well, and the other challenge I do, because I have to find instructors to teach my courses as well, and something I always struggle with is finding the individuals that have the technical capabilities to understand the material, but yet still have the social skills to be able to break it down to people that don't understand that material. And trying to find a technical advisor, I'm sure, is probably along those same lines, trying to find somebody with both the technical and the social skills, and that's just a lot harder to find. There's not a lot of people out there like that.
Yeah, and that's almost a personality thing.
It is.
Yeah, it's something where I know that for years working as an engineer, I was in the weeds so often, I'd be talking to management, they'd look at me like, what are you talking about? So, and then the more I tried to step back, like looking at the cliff, looking at the handholds, until you can see the mountain, then I start to remove myself from my technical expertise as well. And a couple years down the road of that, it's like, I've become less technical and more of a generalist. So I understand that. It's like you can't, your brain's a sponge and you dump water in the top and some's got to come out the bottom. It can only hold so much, at least in relevant random access patterns, let's put it that way.
Definitely true.
So as far as, let me see, I'm going back to my list of questions, which ones are relevant. We are putting together, you know, here in Colorado, this effort for cybersecurity, and we talked a little bit before this, that it's really geared more towards economic development than it is towards an international standardization process.
Yeah.
But you've been a part of a lot of these efforts. What kind of recommendations do you give to an organization, a local government, you know, leaders in our community or whatever, about how to start and organize such of an effort?
You know, I think one of the hardest things that I think all of these efforts, any effort that I've ever participated inside of cybersecurity, the one thing we're always missing is simply people. And I think that part of what you said is you know, inside of Colorado, that's one of the reasons why they're initiating this is because they are concerned with you know, having some people resources, but also wanting to not lose those resources. That's part of the reason why I spend so much time doing education. It's kind of twofold. Number one is because there's only so much time you can do pure consulting or, you know, pure writing of tools inside of your computer. I really like teaching and being able to be a part of that process. It's kind of a nice way to break up the monotony of my schedule. So I usually try to reserve about 25% of my time for teaching. But in reality, I think really trying to educate and get, you know, some of the colleges and universities, trying to attract new talent that's coming out, and as well as trying to train existing talent, you know, to come inside of that cybersecurity realms. And in the case of critical infrastructure, you know, try to get some engineers, you know, and like yourself, they had that engineering background, get them into cybersecurity because they have a background and a knowledge set that is critical when we start talking about critical infrastructure and defending against cyber attacks there. Because up to this point, most security professionals are from the IT side of the house, as you already mentioned. So I would say figuring out that man problem is probably the hardest one, and not just figuring it out for the now, but figuring it out for the future, keeping that steady stream going. Mm-hmm. That's a challenge. And then, of course, the other big challenge is back to the complexity of these systems. What is the right solution? You know, we know many different types of solutions that are effective. Often we are still failing because we aren't necessarily implementing all those solutions because there's so many to implement. And we get lost in the complexity and confusion about what to implement. And for anybody that's read NIST 853 and all the controls inside of 853 just knows that, yeah, we have a good handle on, you know, what defenses block specific types of attacks. But, you know, trying to implement them and trying to make sense of them and apply them to our systems in a systematic manner to scale, which is even harder, that's where we're all still struggling and why we're still having so many problems right now with all the breaches.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I had another guest who told me that, you know, he tried to sell training for years for cybersecurity. He couldn't even give this stuff away. The market for people attending or wanting to learn about it has been light, and I've seen that myself. And we're talking about all the things that people have to learn now, what we have to tell people, how we have to have people know certain things, but the desire. How do we affect the desire for people to want to jump in, want to get involved?
So the thing that makes me tick is often the same thing that makes most of us tick inside of this industry, and might be, you know, the inherent thing missing from being able to bring more people aboard. Who knows? But for me, it's just more about the curiosity. I have an insatiable curiosity. I will consume any type of information I can. That's my favorite pastime, is simply learning. I think that's almost a key that anybody in this profession really needs to have, something that is an internal motivator to keep them motivated to keep on going and keep on learning and keep on trying. Because, you know, to be very honest, inside of this field, if you look at the number of compromises and breaches that we've had over the years, it's been doing nothing but increasing. But yet, the number of staff we have, the number of people that we're bringing into this field, the number of current professionals in this field, the knowledge that we have, the defenses and security tools that we have has also been increasing. But yet, the problem is we're still not, you know, winning. We're still kind of losing right now, because until we can try to get those breaches plateaued or decreasing across the board for the United States or even in a specific industry, it's kind of a disheartening feel to work in, because we're constantly losing, and it's a rough field to be in. So, I mean, you have to have some other motivation than I'm winning. It's for me, it's understanding how things work, and, you know, knowing that I'm doing good inside of the area that I'm doing, and that, you know, no matter how small of a difference, I'm making some type of a difference.
Yeah, that's interesting. That, you know, you say internal motivator, but no matter what, you take a cross-section of society, there's going to be a very few people internally motivated, and on a specific topic, even less. How do we engage people? And we always, you know, I've heard, had plenty of guests say the same thing, that the average age in the cybersecurity industry is getting older every year. We're not engaging a younger generation. It's like they look at it from a different way and don't even bother for some reason. What do you see in that? I saw your head turn.
Yeah, I don't really see that. I see the influx seems to be fairly steady across the age ranges. I don't really feel like we're getting older. I mean, you can go to, you know, some of the events that are more attractive to younger audiences, something like DEF CON, that's inexpensive, because if you're a college student or a high school student, you don't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, so going to audiences like DEF CON, we still see, you know, there definitely is a lot of older people there. But I think the reason why maybe it feels older is because if you remember when all of us started 15 years ago, it was a brand new profession. And it was a lot of us, you know, that were in college and high school that really started getting interested in and really kind of pushing the envelope and doing a lot of that initial research into, you know, defenses and attacks. And so I think maybe the industry has been growing up with us, but I don't personally see a slowdown of interest in the universities. In fact, I would say there's probably an increase, because if you simply look at cybersecurity programs across the universities and the NSA Institutes of Excellence, I think is what they call it, that are, you know, the NSA accredited institutes that are teaching cybersecurity, that's been continually growing. I mean, we have one here in the United States, or one here in Utah, and I have, you know, between Colorado and Idaho, you know, there's probably three or four within 2 or 3 hours around, maybe 3 or 4 hours drive of me. Mm-hmm. That was nothing even close to existed to that, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10 years ago. It's been So I don't really see that. Now, I can definitely agree that maybe we don't have enough to be able to supply the ranks, mm-hmm. you know. That's a huge problem, and we're always looking for experienced people to fill the ranks. But there's a huge number of people that are coming up that are being interested, and not just here, but I do a lot of work internationally. I do quite a bit of work with, you know, in the Middle East, inside of Asia, inside of Europe, and, you know, same thing there. I see huge numbers. I'd say most of the people I interface with nowadays probably are mid-20s.
You know, I saw that the efforts in Israel. There was a really mm-hmm. younger population, crowds there. And I guess my experience and most people that I've talked to have said that is from central heartland, I guess, U.S., where, and maybe outside of the black hats and the sexy, say, younger generation type of things. But it's interesting that you have a different approach to it. I might have to ping you on that and how we can kind of mesh that into what we see here. I know the local ISSA chapter here said over the last decade, their average age has gone up considerable.
Well, that's because you're looking at ISSA. No offense. I think ISSA does some wonderful, wonderful things. But if you look at the audience and the target and the purpose of ISSA, and then you start rolling into, you know, the fees to be members of it, mm-hmm. and the topics that are usually presented at the meetings, those are things that are geared more towards more experienced professionals. They're not really geared towards, you know, the community, the grassroots. And you look at some of the other security groups, like here in the United States, we have a lot of B-sides conferences that are out there that are really attracting younger audiences. If you look abroad, there's other types of conferences. So there's one I attend every year in India that's called NullCon. It's in Goa, India. If anybody's looking at a hacker con that's kind of between DEF CON and Black Hat, mm-hmm. you know, kind of half professional but yet still very grassroots, and in a very tropical place on a beach, you know, NullCon, dirt cheap to go and attend, fairly inexpensive to be able to stay there. And actually, from a technical perspective, for inside of cybersecurity, an amazing concert or conference to go to.
I think you probably just hit on something, that there's a different set of conferences that we need to mm-hmm. maybe try to attract here and have that different audience see this as the center. That's an interesting thought. I'll have to take some note of some of those conferences that you mentioned, because I have not been to any of them, and add them into some of the effort here and see if we can maybe host something like that here as part of what we're doing.
Be more than happy to work with you on that. That's something I've always tried to stay in touch with, is those grassroots efforts. For me, that's kind of a source of renewed energy to be able mm-hmm. to steal some of that energy. You know, now that I'm 40 years old, it's always nice hanging out with those younger crowds to you know, throw ideas at them and watch them run with those ideas.
Yeah, and you know what? I'd have to say my involvement with some of the, like, the NIST groups and everything, they have definitely aged out.
They are.
So I think we have a new rotation here, and this has been a great kind of awakening here for me, is because pulling in some of these or making recommendations for these new rotation cycles, I think, is where we need to go with it.
True.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I thank you for being on, Justin. Is there anything else, kind of in closing? I always like to ask, we'll have two more questions for you. One, anything you would recommend to somebody starting this effort that maybe we haven't covered? What's your thoughts?
You know, I would say, if you're an individual wanting to get more involved in some of these larger efforts, the biggest thing you can do is become part of some of these communities. So, you know, look for the different groups in your local areas. There are usually tons of them. You know, there's DEF CON groups if you want kind of the more unruly, often penetration testing and attack type focus groups that, you know, once again, they often call it hacker groups, but in reality, they use the term hackers in creative solutions. They're not actually going out and attacking real organizations out there illegally. And then if you start looking, there's opposite spectrum. We end up having like the ISSAs and the ISACAs and the ISC squared groups that are out there. And then we have things kind of in the middle, like your OWASP groups for the open web and application security. And then like the efforts that you guys are putting together right there in your own backyard. And of course, don't forget the universities. There's lots of university efforts that are there. Like, for instance, here in Utah, a lot of the cybersecurity experts across the university and state of Utah started a group called Utah Saint. That's now, you know, part of our Utah SEC group. But Utah Saint runs a conference, Saint Con, every year, and it's actually the biggest cybersecurity conference we have here in Utah. Mm-hmm. And then for events, you know, B-Sides is always either a free or a very inexpensive group to go to, and that's always great. If you are more of an organizer trying to start some type of an effort, or trying to attract talent, same thing. Get involved with these groups. This is where the talent actually is. And depending on the type of skill set you're looking for, who you're trying to attract, just go ahead and identify the appropriate group to try to bring those back into back into your fold and try to populate what you need.
Okay, sounds good. And lastly, any shout outs you'd like to give for what you're doing, how people can get a hold of you, services you offer, feel free.
Yeah, so feel free. If anybody's interested, go over to utilisec.com. You'll be able to find all the contact information there. You can just drop me an email at justin@utilisec. Or if you want my personal email, it's justin@meas.com. So MEEAS.com. You know, both of them always make it my way. You can find me on Twitter, on Facebook, on any of the social media out there. And I'm always more than happy to have conversations with people. Like I said, I'm big into trying to help out where I can, whether that's working with your biggest vendors out there inside of the control system field, working with your asset owners, or, you know, working with college students and just trying to help them understand what a career path looks like in this field.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for joining today, Justin. And it's been great catching up with you. It's been a couple of years since we've talked.
It has.
So thanks a lot. Have a great day.
Hey, thank you.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.